This is the SEN Breakfast Monday Microscope with Gary Lyon, Tim Watson and Kane Corns.
It is indeed, and we love having our great friend Kane Corns join us on a Monday, normally to review the action from the weekend, but there has been no action on the weekend, so we'll be casting our minds forward to the big grand final here at Optus Stadium, and he's in town, the big volcano, he's taken over Perth, and he joins us on the line. Welcome, Kane. Not hearing the volcano. He's got some technical issues there, Whispers.
Isn't he with you?
Not in here. Not in this studio.
Why didn't you just bring him into the studio with you?
Well, and do his show concurrently.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we actually, on every other day we could, but the big Gossage and Gilly are here.
Oh, so of course. Of course.
There's only two studios. Can we try again with the volcano?
You there, Kano? No, he's not quite right. We're going to have to fix that. We'll get to him in a minute. You had a chopper ride with him. We're going to talk about that, are we not? You had a chopper ride with him late last week?
Yeah, we...
He loves his flying, doesn't he?
We went down to Bunbury for a breakfast straight after the show, and I think it was Wednesday. The weather was a bit inclement, and we sort of got into the chopper. I'm looking at it and going, ooh, this doesn't look too good to me. But it doesn't really worry me, the flying part of it, but it did, the big volcano.
Hey, before,
there's a twist in the tail.
There is always a twist in the tail. We're still trying to establish contact with him. He's over there in Perth somewhere. He might have gone out very late night,
well,
did he?
Might have got a taste for it after Friday night. He might have got a little bit of a taste.
Hey, the Tarrant news over the weekend, did that catch you by surprise?
Well, it did.
He's
again
33 years of age.
I know. I feel like a little bit out of the loop. I try and stay across everything you can and doing my best I can over here, but I'm not right at the coalface of the trade stuff. I'm concentrating more on the footy. But so I thought there was a report that said that Tarrant and Zeeble had recommitted to the North Melbourne Footy Club. Now, clearly that wasn't the case. I don't even know if Jack Zeeble's been signed yet, has he?
No, I don't know. I don't know about that. But when you look at it and you think, okay, well, it fills the need for Richmond right now.
Fantastic for the Tigers.
And he can play still. Like, he should be over his...
His back half of last year, this season, was fantastic. You had that real health scare, of course.
Yeah, exactly. And, for them, they can move on. They've got Ben McKay. We've got Kane back now on the line. Good morning, Kane.
G'day, Tim. I just picked up the phone. Not sure why we couldn't connect. G'day, Gaz. Phenomenal night last night. Just listening to you speak about Robbie Tarrant as well. So we'll get to all of that. But, yeah, it was a good one. What a winner it was last night for Ollie Wines.
Yeah,
first winner for the Port Adelaide Footy Club, so that's always an historic moment, and just blew the next best. I think your brother, Chadwick, might have been the highest. Was he the highest before that?
I did hear Hamish say that last night, that Chad back in 2007 with 22. So, I mean, 36, they've taken a new, these midfielders just getting ridiculous amounts of votes. But imagine Bontempelli polling 33 votes in a Brownlow and not winning it. Like, that's a bit stiff as well. But he was a very worthy winner. The amount of ball that he won this year, how tough and courageous he was and how well he led Port Adelaide. And I thought an outstanding winner last night. It was really special to be there and see him win it.
And a bit of the consensus was that, one of the great challenges for Clayton Oliver would be the fact that Petrarca would be taking votes off him. And Ollie had Trav Boak taking votes off him as well. Travis polled really well on the night.
Yeah, Trav's a polling beast. So he ended up with 25, and you're right, Petrarca, 23. So anyway, it was a mate. What are we going to do about these other positions other than...
We're not allowed to talk about it.
No, not today. Yeah, today is not the day.
We're not allowed to talk about it today.
Okay, right.
I raised it, and Tim, I've never seen him get so snitchy with me. So at some other stage, we'll talk about it. But there has been a suggestion that the defenders are going to boycott next year's Brownlow and have a picket line outside Brownlow. No vote, no go. No go, no vote. That's what they're going to do.
They might have to.
Hey, you were positioned beautifully last night, strategically, right in the middle of, on the dance floor, right in the middle next to the boss, Craig Hutchison.
He made a good plus one, didn't he? So he was my plus one. No, not at all. I got the late call up. I was just sort of sitting around. I'd done the Sunday footy show. I'd punched out a 2-hour run, as you do, Tim, and got the text to see if I wanted to go late. And I thought, well, I might as well get in the spirit of things. Like, I'm not a very social person. I don't love big crowds. I don't love small talk. Well, I thought I might as well make the most of it while you're here. So went along. And the highlight for me, so that the first person I ran into as they sort of shunt you out onto the Optus Stadium deck for pre-drinks, think it's what the cool kids call it, Tim, was Ben Cousins. And I was like, oh, I've got an amazing... So I have a great record times of playing against Ben Cousins. Mm. And I always loved him as a player when I was sort of... I think that the players that make the most impact on you are the ones when you're about 15 or 16 and you have ambitions to play, not for you because you're already dominating the AFL at that age, Tim, but they're the ones that have a big impact on you. So for me, it was Crawford and Cousins. And I walked in, I was like, I don't want to bother Ben Cousins. You know how many people that want to have a chat? But anyway, I did. And I had a good 10 minutes with him. And it was great. That was the highlight. We were reminiscing about the old days and playing on each other and a few funny stories. So he was great. So that was the first person I saw, and that was a highlight of my night.
He looked really well. Did you tag him for the rest of the night, or did you leave him alone?
Well, that was what everyone was saying. It was like, just let him get a drink. Stop putting your arm across. Stop worrying about him getting a drink. Stop worrying about him. So that was the running joke all night. I did sort of, you know, have urges. I sort of had urges to just bump him off the ball when he wasn't looking. But it was a fun night, and it was a special one to be there for Port Adelaide's first ever winner.
Now, your reputation is of you're leading a very monastic life. You're just you're a teetotaler. You go to bed at 5 in the afternoon. You run 25 kilometres for fun. All I've seen from you since you've been here is you're out on the tiles. You're taking helicopters all around the town. You just Friday night, I couldn't get rid of you. I just wanted to go to bed, and all you wanted to do was have another drink. What's gone wrong? What's happened to you, man?
I'm off the rails. I'm actually off the rails.
That's official.
You've led me astray. So one red wine turned into three, and then all of a sudden I'm drinking vodka and soda. I'm like, what has... And then I want to keep going, and everyone else wants to go. I'm like, come on, you soft. Let's... No, but it was one of the fun nights on Friday night, just one of those unexpected ones.
And I'm not talking out of skill, Tim, but there was... like a hen's night party there or something. I don't know. They were all dressed in leopard sort of dresses, but must have been a theme.
Right.
And they're having some photos. All Kane was, hey, what about the volcano? Come and get a photo with the volcano.
Because all they wanted was Gary. Gary's everyone's saying Basil's. That's not true. Gary, every man and their dog wants a photo of Gary.
No. So it was very funny. I laughed.
He's
scratching his back.
He's the king of... Hey, there's a couple of footy things that have happened, big things that happened. We spoke about Robbie Tarrant. Looks like I think it's a good fit for the Tigers for, you know, like a season or two. But I had heard before that Daniel Talia was sort of potentially headed to Richmond. Where do you think that leaves him now?
Go to the Roos.
Yeah, well, he can't. He may do that. He can't go to Richmond, can he? Because they're very similar types of player. And I do like it for Tarrant because he's played in four finals. Okay, he's 33 years of age. You think, well, you know, if Richmond are going to have one last crack, I want to be playing in September. So I like it. For Talia, he's still 28. He's only 29 years of age, so he'll find somewhere. And you know, he's a good key defender. I'm not exactly what sure club it'll be, but you just got to move with that. And obviously, they prioritise Tarrant, so it leaves Daniel Talia a bit lost for at least a couple of weeks.
Geelong, can I just ask you, Gary? Just would Geelong be looking at Talia now? Do you think as a fullback, key position player?
I hope. Well, I don't think so. I don't think he's what they would need down there, another sort of 30-pluser.
Well, do you think? But I understand that. But Henderson, would think
the kid Kluger or the young boy down there that's played two games has got a bit of size, Tim. Sometime you got to bite the bullet and play these guys. Otherwise, he'll leave. You got to give him an opportunity.
No, I understand that. But if we use their...
If we use their
history as any guide, at 29, he's a young recruit for the Cats.
Yeah, well, maybe they will have a look for the Cats. That is true. Hey, Jordan Dawson fascinates me. I remember this year when he was ripping at the shreds for Sydney, halfback onto the wing, just went through this vein of form, and now he's been squeezed out. Apparently for salary cap reasons. So now he's gone back to Adelaide, that's right. So he's got the choice of the two. Where do you think he'll end up?
Yeah. Well, he's been apparently from some reports on Channel Wisp that he was doing the lunch at Mark Rusciuto's house. So he's been to both clubs. He's toured Adelaide and Port Adelaide. But the feeling is he's going to choose the Crows, which which is big for them because a couple of recruits have recently chosen Port Adelaide, Fantasia, and a few others recently. And I think they need him more than what Port Adelaide do. I mean, Port Adelaide, all their priorities should be on trying to find a midfielder who can play inside, which is where they've been showing up. Now, he would really help on the outside, but he doesn't help you on the inside. And for the Crows, you know, another good ball user, centre forward, would be a good thing. So I think he will choose. I think he will choose Adelaide, and he'll be a very, very good pickup for them.
The Carlton coach, this is interesting. It's been reported over the weekend. Cookie's there. He hasn't given up on the idea of recruiting Alistair Clarkson. And this is real. This is what's happening. They still believe there is a chance and he's going to have a real crack at him. But they have got down to the final two or three on their coaching search as well. Michael Voss is one of those. Adam Kingsley is another. Which direction do you think they'll go?
Out of those, well, it's funny because Vossi was nearly got the job last time, didn't he? And Adam Kingsley has been down to the last three of about four jobs, I reckon. So you know, play with King as he's got a great footy resume, really strong football person, and then and Vossi's Vossi. So if, maybe Vossi for the maybe because of the name and what he may bring as well, and I think he's done a great amount of work, not only coaching, but also in the leadership space, and every club is about connection now and how you connect with the group and let each other be their own personalities, and I think he's done a power of work on that. So if it was out of those two, I think they may choose Michael Voss, but you never know how these coaches present and get down to the last one and which way they may go, so we'll wait and see.
The intel on Voss is that he's a very good relationship builder around a football club, really understands the mechanics of that.
He's a very good, and he's got the aura. So some coaches have got the aura where they walk into a room and you just, there's something about them that you just, you sort of eyes are drawn to them. And then every time he speaks, he's captivating the audience. Technically, I'm not sure if something may have held him back in recent, you know, coaching searches because he's got close, but then he's always been picked at the last one. So I'm not sure technically and game plan wise how he is viewed, but certainly from a leadership, from an aura, from when he talks, you listen, can command the attention of the room. I'd love to see him get another opportunity, and he'll be much better second time around.
No, Clarko, I think Voss is in the front, in the driver's seat there. This is the Monday Microscope. Get half price off vitamins at Chemist Warehouse. We'll take a break with Kano. It is a grand final on Saturday. It is the Western Bulldogs taking on the Demons. We'll get his early thoughts after this.
This is the SEN Breakfast Monday Microscope with Gary Lyon, Tim Watson and Kane Corns.
I know it's only Monday and we've got 5 days to go until the grand final, and we've had a big build-up, build-up already of 7 days, but Kano is here with us on a Monday. It is the big Western Bulldogs of Melbourne grand final. What's your early thoughts? What are you looking at? Have you gone back and had a look at the two games they played?
Yeah, I have. My early thought is the midfield and how the Western Bulldogs are going to combat Gawn and Jackson early, and Stephen Martin, the role that he's going to play. Like, often you come back for one game and it's a lot easier the first game. The second game becomes a little bit harder. Of course, that's been helped by the week off that he's had, but what are they going to do with Gawn? Like, how physical are they going to be with him off the ball? A couple of teams have tried that in the last two seasons, not a lot, and it seemed to work a little bit. Is anyone going to go after Max Gawn this week and try and put some physicality into him? So that's my early thought. I just think that, though, Melbourne have been so well structured and so well drilled, and they defend with 18. We know all that. We've spoken about it all year. Can they just shut the Western Bulldogs down? That's the feeling. That's probably the feeling I get, and the extra week to prepare for that and what they're going to do has me fascinated. The tactical battle, you know, how do they get May and Lever free, and does Shacky go to one of them, and what do they do with Bailey Smith? All this stuff. I think the tactics, Tim, really fascinates me, and the extra week off has given these coaches a lot of time, and how much they've stewed over it. Have they looked at it too much? I don't know, but that's what I'm looking at as well in the coach's box and how that works.
I'm not really allowed to talk about midfielders. That's become obvious this morning. Tim's told me about 12 times, but the Bulldogs won by 20 points second time around, and Max had 56 hit-outs, Wiz.
That's right.
So is it not as big an issue? Or Max, in the form that he was in 2 weeks ago, is. But that seemed to be a pretty dominant rucking display. And The Bulldogs won. Bond had 31. McRae had 38. 9 clearances. That Bond and McRae had 18 clearances between them, despite the fact Gawn had 56 hit-outs.
Yeah, and Max has already spoken about the fact that Martin is one of the more physical ruckmen going around and more difficult to combat at stoppages. Now, he didn't play last time against them. So, at worst, what he does is he nullifies the opposition ruckman. He makes it difficult for them to actually be able to position themselves and get those clear taps, Martin. The other thing that they did last time was they engineered these matchups against the Bulldogs, and we'll go into more detail later in the week, but against Melbourne to try and render their defence less effective than what it's been. So Hannon actually ended up on May and took him further up the ground. So what they wanted to do, they wanted to get Lever back so that he had to pick up Norton. And it actually worked really well for the Bulldogs. But the thing is, Melbourne got the opportunity to look at that last time as to what they did. And now they've had a lot of time, obviously, to make sure or to come up with an alternative plan. So it's going to be a fascinating battle from the coach's box at the weekend.
I'm interested in this, Kano, about this rucking situation. So Gawn has 56 hit-outs, right? Bont and Pally McRae have 18 clearances between them. So because he's getting hit outs, is it then easier for them to read? So it's a bit more predictable, therefore Max is going to win it. We understand that. So they concentrate purely on Max. And if you get Stephen Martin in there just all of a sudden nullifying Max and then there's no clear hit zone, is that going to make it harder maybe?
And I think that when you're on as a midfielder, when you're on the end of the winning ruckman and you basically know when they go up, they're going to win it. There is, subconsciously, you almost get on your bike a little bit too soon. Like you're leaning towards going rather than leaning towards being defensive. And the minute you take sort of 1 foot offside, then the opposition can read it and they're away and the quality of their clearances are stronger than what you're going to get. It's the Aaron Sandilands factor going back a while. You know, win the hit outs every week, but Fremantle weren't necessarily a great midfield throughout that time. I think the one real dominant ruckman, Nat Nui, is a huge advantage. Other than that, there's not many at the stoppage. But for me, it's more about what Gawn does around the ground. I mean, that's where the improvement has come from. I mean, he now has a great understanding of positioning himself where the team needs him. So is it back? Is it on Norton for 30 seconds so I can, so we can get the May or Lever free? Or is it forward from a stoppage? Can I really push hard and expose Stephen Martin aerobically? So I think that's what I'm interested in. That's where the improvement for me, and that's why Max Gawn is a superstar. It's not just for the 56 hitouts, it's for the impact that he's been having around the ground and plugging a hole here and there and slowing ball movement down, but then going forward, that's where he's turned himself into a superstar.
You were the superstar tagger. You were the number one tagger, shutdown clamper in the competition, the cooler of the competition you were. Where would you go if you were shutting down the Melbourne midfielder or the Bulldog midfielder? Which of those two players or which of those teams' players would you go to in the midfield?
Well, there's the Libba talk for the Bulldogs. I'd go Bontempelli. I mean, you just go to the best one, I think. And yeah, you need to have someone who can go with him if he goes forward and be, confident enough to do that. So I would be going to the best player, the way I saw it, and most damaging player from the opposition. So for me, it's Bontempelli because I just don't want him touching the footy in the forward half because he'll just cut you up. See, I don't think they will do it, Gaz. I don't think they will go with a run with player. I mean, it's probably Harms if you're going to go with anyone. But I mean, they've been so strong in their system, so I'd be probably backing that in. But if you had to do one, it'd be Bontempelli, and for the opposition, it's Oliver. Whether they start that way or whether it's wait and see if he gets out of hand and they go Dunkley. But I don't see it happening. I think both teams will go in head-to-head and back their own midfields in their own system.
I'm really interested to see what they do with Bailey Smith, Melbourne.
Same.
Whether they go after Bailey Smith.
What do you mean go after? Like tag?
Well, tagging. No. Well, both. But, yeah, be physical. And that's what everybody's going to be in a grand final. But whether you go after him or you don't. And because of the run and the excitement and whatever else that he does on the outside that gives so much to the Bulldogs team.
Well, he started on the wing, but if they do try him, which I don't think they will, right? But if they do, they will manipulate their matchup. And so then he just pushed forward, Melbourne like to have Angus Brayshaw and Langdon as their regular wingers that hold their width and play that, because they've played that role as well as anyone this year, right? So then they will be loath to go, okay, if Bailey Smith pushes forward, then you've got to, you know, all of a sudden sacrifice that position that you've played all year and go with him. I don't think so. I think there'll be someone for him if he was to push forward, but I don't reckon it'll be a Brayshaw or a Langdon. I think they'll stick to what they've been doing all year.
Just quickly as well, they can, if they want, they want him free, they can put him half forward, and they'll say, well, Lever can probably go to him, but he'll drop off. But if you do that, I'm going to come up the ground, I'm going to sprint back, and I'm going to hit the scoreboard as well. So the other move that Beveridge has is to put him as that high half forward and see whether the opposition want to go with him or see whether they want to drop off and
they
manufacture that spare, which killed,
Ken
Hinckley.
Early margin and Norm Smith, you got 5 seconds.
Melbourne and Clayton Oliver.
Right, we'll get to bed early, will you? Stop being the night owl that you have been. And good luck, and we'll talk on Monday. Counting down to the grand final on Saturday, 5 days to go. So the number five we're after. And this man, what the time? You know what the time here is, Wisp?
No, I don't.
6:42 in the morning. The only time he was up at 6:40 is when he was getting home back in the day. I don't know why he's up this early here. Earl Spalding, good enough to join us. Duke, what's going on?
Oh, I know you've woken me up, Gaz. you're quite correct. I don't think I could last at 6:42 anymore. At night. PM, I struggle at times. So, looking forward to this Saturday, I can tell you. I'll be wide awake at 6:42 p.m. Saturday.
Have you seen it all unfold, this Melbourne side that you played over 100 games with that have had some ups and downs? This would be as good a team as you've seen in recent times?
Oh, I think so. I actually thought early on in the year, I thought, geez, if I make the grand final, I might have to make my way over to Melbourne, but I haven't had to. They made their way here. So it was really exciting, obviously, for someone like yourself, Gaz, who's been in the club for so long. To go in the grand final is probably raging favourites, I think. It's really exciting. So we're all sort of crossing our fingers and hoping that the young guys can hold up and not get overwhelmed by the situation. But they've shown pretty steely nerve so far. So, roll on 5:15 on Saturday.
Earl, did you ever think that there was a chance that Perth would host the AFL Grand Final?
No, not in the pink fit. No. I'm a traditionalist. I think the game belongs at the MCG, the last day in September. It's a fantastic spectacle over there and a great week for the town. But, you know, these are weird times, aren't they? We're living in now.
They are crazy times. You played 211 games, 109 for Melbourne, 102 for Carlton. Do you see yourself more as a Melbourne or a Carlton man these days?
Probably depends who's going better, Timmy. Being a two-club person like yourself, you probably have to balance that out with West Coast and Essendon.
It's a difficult choice. Tell us about the Melbourne that you found when you arrived there many years ago as a young player in 87. I think it was probably 87, 86 you first arrived at Melbourne. What sort of a club was it?
For me, it was just a great adventure and very young group. With a few old guys that were at the end of their tether. And, I think had a couple of really good years with the 19s and reserves prior to me arriving. And I was so fortunate to be there in the 5 years I had there. We played finals every year. So we're probably a bit unlucky in a couple of years and not quite good enough in the others. But, it was a fantastic 5 years of my life and got great memories from it and great friendships.
Gary often refers to himself as a swing man. Was he swinging forward or back when you were playing back in the day?
Depends if I was getting a kick or not, probably. that was part of the frustration for me, and one of the reasons I ended up looking for greener pastures at the end was probably not being settled, and Gaz was probably swinging back and forth depending if I was going all right or not. And Jamie Dersma sort of fell into that hole as well. So... We did travel both ends of the ground.
It was a very, very tight-knit social group at that time, Duke. Your memories there of the big Strawberry O'Dwyer and others, it's held you in good stead for later life.
Hey, absolutely. One of my great regrets in life was not going on the Toronto-London footy trip, which is probably one of the great ones of all time, and it's been getting a fair run of late. So Yeah, Big Straw's the front and centre most times when we're away.
A lot of people don't probably know this about you, though, Earl, that you were a former West Australian state fast bowler as well. You played first-class matches against Sri Lanka, is that right?
Yeah, played a couple of Shield games and a first-class game against Sri Lanka. Didn't bother the scorers with the bat, unfortunately. I managed to snag a couple of wickets, but I was always going to play footy, so footy was first.
Like a lot of those
through my junior career.
A lot of those former players with big cricket reputations, Tim, we'd have a country versus city cricket game, and when that came, most of them failed, including Adam Uzo, who rated himself as a great cricketer, and every time he played for the country, he failed more often than not. How would you go in those, Duke? Did you get a wicket or not?
Yeah, no good. I always thought I was going to play cricket in Melbourne when I went over at some stage, probably not initially, just to get my footy underway and settled, but I knew that was never going to happen when I couldn't get the late, great Jimmy Steins out, who seriously made me look like Donald Bradman with a bat, so I couldn't get him out, but that's it.
Yeah, because cricket was so strong in Ireland at the time.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, you went on, you played in the D's losing grand final in 1988. We won't talk about that, but you did win a flag with the Blues in 95. You must have great memories about that actual final series.
Yeah, absolutely. I was obviously the pinnacle of my career, and the losing two, I think we probably went in favourites in 93 against your mob, Timmy, but just got absolutely cleaned up from the first bounce. And 88, we were underdogs and got cleaned up there too. So I was 30 in 95, and you start wondering if it was going to happen for you. So we just had an unbelievable year. We only lost the two games, and that last day, we were probably never going to lose it. We were a bit shaky in our first final against Brisbane, who were in pretty good form at the time, but coming off straight sets exit in 94, there's a fair bit of pressure on us. So to get the result was a great relief, but also just a great day.
And you came back to West Australia, Duke, with the family. You coached here too, haven't you? I know you coached. What are you into at the moment, and who have you been involved with since you got back?
Yeah, I've coached Perth for the last 6 years, not including this year. I hand the reins over to a younger guy, Gary Moss, who was at Hawthorn for a while. And Mossy's had his first year in the job, and so I've sort of taken a back seat and helping out with the talls and just sitting in the box with the reserves guys and a bit of mentoring that. So that's been interesting. Our Rezzy's wade their way into the grand final yesterday via the second semi, so they're all pretty excited about it. But yeah, probably coming to the end of my footy attachment, I think. So, yeah, it's been a great journey for me, but there's always a time to hang them up and do something else.
No doubt. You're getting a lot of love here off our Temper Text machine here. Great memories of both Melbourne and Carlton. So, hopefully I'm going to catch up with you on the weekend. How are you seeing it unfold?
I did see your... probably your side of it, and definitely agree on all points. You know, you try and tip with your head rather than your heart, but both of them sort of pointing in the right direction. I think there'd be no surprise or no massive upset, I think, if the Bulldogs got up, but I just can't see it unless Melbourne don't, unless they cop a few injuries early and it's not on their terms. But I think they're better back and forward. I think their midfield is a really good matchup. I mean, I don't think they're I don't think the midfield's better than Bulldogs, but I think it's pretty even there. So if they get on top there, I can't see them losing. And even if they sort of get slightly edged there, I think their back half and just the way they defend the whole ground, it's been fantastic to see, really.
Ollie Wines was absolutely sensational, and his dad has been good enough, Tony, to join us this morning on what would be a pretty busy morning, I reckon. Tony, well done, and congratulations to you and the family.
Thank you, Tim, Gary. No, it has been reasonably busy for Monday morning, yes.
What time did you end up getting to bed last night, and when did you get to talk to Ollie?
He called us. We had one of your old cohorts turn up here with a bottle of champagne at about 10:30. But, I think, was he number 25?
Simon Isham rocked up, didn't he?
Back in the old
nice. Well, he would have been a coach, was he? Was he a coach of Ollie?
Yeah. No, we're pretty close to the Isham. So we spoke to him a little bit later in the evening. So he was pretty pumped with the boys, yeah.
At what stage of the night did you think it was the right time to actually pop the cork on the champagne, Tony?
It, look, I suppose it's something, you know, you never ever expect someone to win a Brownlow. He'd had a good year, but I sort of thought, I knew he had a sort of a pretty good second half of the year, so probably with about three games out, I thought he's a pretty good chance here. Yeah.
Yeah, so he, and when the Western Bulldogs lose the last three games and the Bont's sitting there, he's helpless, he can't do anything. And you look at, I had a form guide in front of me, so I'm seeing that Ollie finished really strongly and had a belter in that last game. Then
yeah,
I noticed he put the jacket on at that stage. I thought, oops, someone stepped him on the shoulder and said, you better get ready.
Clayton had an exceptionally good year. I think, you know, Petrarca probably took a few votes off Clayton later in the season. But look, at the end of the day, you get what you deserve, don't you?
Yeah, you do. And he spoke magnificently last night too, Tony. A credit to you and your family.
No, good. Yeah. No, he's settled in. It's taken a while, Tim. There was a lot of tears going back to the 2nd of November 2012. Don't worry about that. But he's at half past nine in the evening when he was drafted. But look, no, he settled in over there, and the Port Adelaide Footy Club, we couldn't ask for anything more. They've been exceptional.
Yeah, and that came through in Ollie's speech, which I thought was great. And Jane and the rest of the family, great scenes on social media, are all going nuts, which is exactly what they should be doing.
They were, Well, we've got three others, and they're all in, they live in North Melbourne. So, no, I did see that. I see they were jumping around a little bit. They do, they follow him pretty closely, the kid. We're a pretty tight family, our six, but there might be a seventh involved, so who knows.
Hey Tony, when you got the chance to speak to him last night, what did you say to him?
It was a little bit difficult at the time, because you know everyone's pretty excited, and just congratulations and you get what you deserve. Yeah. Ollie. You know, the old cliche, the harder you work, the luckier you get, basically.
Did you shed a tear at any stage last night? It's a fairly emotional thing, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Yeah, I did. I sort of got a little teary, keep this quiet, but it sort of coming into the last round, because, you looked at the numbers and I thought, well, the worst thing can happen is he can come and draw with someone. So, yeah, no, a little bit teary. You guys know, you sort of dads take kids to their first footy, and probably mums as well. But the father's sort of there through the process, I think if you sit back and reflect a little bit on the journey, yeah, you do think that it's, I suppose, all been worthwhile, hasn't it?
100%, and that's what today's all about, Tone, I would imagine. Just sit back and get the cup of tea, get out on the deck there, overlook the river, maybe take the boat out for a cruise, and just think back about young Ollie and where he's gone, where he's come from, and he's now the toast of the whole football world, and it's deservedly so. So congratulations to you and the whole family. It was a great night.
Thank you, Gary, but we've got to be a little bit careful about the boat.
Oh, yes,
yes,
we
do. Yes,
we're not suggesting you try and do one of those special jumps, but just a slow cruise down the river might be the way to go.
Yeah, that's right. We'll put the Barbie boat on the back.
Well, he can still ski, but he can't. You can't film it. That's all, Tony.
No, that's right. That's it.
Good on you, Tone. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, boys.